Welcome to episode 4 of the Family Medicine Revolution podcast. My name is Cody Mitchell-Treat, and in this episode, we're going to talk a little bit about CFP's inaugural all-member advocacy meeting, which took place March 1st through 3rd in Sacramento, California. Similar to past congresses of delegates, the meeting was heavily focused on advocacy efforts, and the 2014 all-member advocacy meeting was a smashing success by all accounts, particularly in attendance and enthusiasm. Both of which set new records. In fact, around 110 attended the all-member advocacy meeting, and 56 were on hand to meet with their legislators on Monday as part of CFP's Lobby Day, which is in fact 24 more participants than last year. Other highlights included the election of new officers, receiving updates on Covered California, and the 2014 Year of the Family Physician photo booth, which was a lot of fun. Next year's all-member advocacy meeting will be held on Saturday and Sunday, March 14th through 15th, and CFP's Lobby Day will be held on Monday, March 16th. On Friday, February 28th, the day before the all-member advocacy meeting got underway, I was privileged enough to speak with CFP speaker Dr. Jay Lee about a variety of topics, including the all-member advocacy meeting. Okay, so Dr. Jay Lee, welcome.
Thank you.
So with all that said, let's start with the description of the all-member advocacy meeting. What is it? What's new or different? And why is it worth our members' time to attend?
Yeah, a few years ago, we started to have a conversation around the format of the Congress of Delegates. One thing that we felt that was important was that we moved strictly from a family medicine policymaking body to more of an advocacy event that includes policy setting, but it's not limited to just that. And I think what that gave us the opportunity to do was to involve and include more advocacy training, more networking for physicians across the state, listening to messages from policy leaders. Like this year, we have Kevin Grumbach from UCSF and Peter Lee from Covered California coming. Hearing testimony from various constituencies within CAFP. I think one of the best informal things that come out of this new format would be what I would call crowdsourcing of ideas. People coming together, coming up with policy ideas, and then kind of fleshing them out in a way that the board can then take and use that to inform our strategy for the coming year. And then I think the biggest one that is really critical for the future of our specialty here in the state is incorporating more medical students and residents. I think when we had the Congress of Delegates format, it was very limiting because only a handful of students or residents could participate. And this really gives those students and residents the opportunity to come and see what this is all about, as we've seen more of them become interested in policy issues because they realize it impacts their future.
Yeah, definitely. And actually this year, we're anticipating that there'll be double the amount of students and residents in attendance. So I guess what more do you hope that they'll gain from the experience, with this increased number and their increased presence?
Yeah, I mean, I think for this, first of all, I'm very excited about the increased numbers of medical students and residents. Many of them do actually have additional training as they've gone on to get a master's in public health or an MBA. And many of them also do come in to healthcare wanting to change the world, wanting to make a difference. And I think it's really good for them to see that there are physicians who are in Generation X and baby boomers that still have passion for changing the system. But I also think it's good for them to gain that experience of learning how to turn one's passions about change into meaningful action. Because I think that's the hard part, is that you come in, you've got some great ideas and some energy, but really the key is leveraging that and turning that into real action. And I think that's where meetings like this can really give students and residents that opportunity to get that experience.
Absolutely. So what are you looking forward to most this weekend?
I think for me, the opportunity to meet with my colleagues and friends from across the state. When it comes down to it, family physicians really still do love our relationships, not only with our patients, but also with those who share our love of the specialty. The opportunity to meet with medical students and residents, and really then to kind of translate what we are doing on a daily or weekly basis online, you know, through social media, turning those virtual connections into real policy and real action and real conversation about how we can move this, not only the specialty forward, but also move the whole healthcare system back towards one that is more weighted towards primary care, because we know that you know, only 100% of the time in systems that favor primary care do you get healthier populations. So, you know, the goal is to make sure that every county in the state has the right number of family physicians and the right type of family physicians who can really impact health and the well-being of Californians.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned social media, and I'd like to change gears a little bit. And I was wondering if you agree or disagree with the statement that Family Medicine Revolution and the hashtag FM Revolution is kind of entering its 2.0 phase, if you will.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, I think up until now, the hashtag has really been utilized as a calling card, as a way for us to discover one another. Certainly, if you're a regular practitioner of social media, you know that part of growth is discovering others and interacting with those folks. And we've certainly built a community that is engaged, that is activated, that has great ideas and shares great ideas with one another through using the FM Revolution hashtag. I think we now need to find ways to use that connectivity and translate that into real change on the ground. And I think that's been slippery. That's been more difficult. And, you know, kind of having the opportunity for family physicians and other like-minded folks using the hashtag to build their leadership chops, apply for and be accepted for healthcare leadership roles at the local, regional, state level. I think this is when we're going to start to see real change. And I know that there are some key family physicians, within our state who hold either office or positions of influence that will allow us to truly become a revolution from within, that it's not just lip service, that it is really turning and transforming the way we deliver healthcare in the state.
Mm-hmm. And FM Revolution has been cited by Dr. Ron Fong as inspiring him to start the hashtag 2014 Year FP, which has morphed into a large social media and a photo campaign that the Academy has been working on the last few months.
That's great. And I've met with Ron both virtually and in real life, and I think the new hashtag is one that I'm really excited about. I think it is very apt, obviously, for and well-positioned for this current year with the implementation and the opening of the health exchange and, many more Californians now being able to develop relationships with primary care docs like family physicians and realizing the value that we can provide for health and well-being, not only for individual patients, but also for communities that we serve.
Gotcha. And, I mean, we were shocked and saddened this week to learn that Dr. George Gale Stevens passed away. And having personally invited him to the NCSC and worked with him, what kind of legacy do you believe he's left behind, and in what ways can we honor him?
Yeah, it was very hard for me to hear that Dr. Stevens passed away this week. He was really one of the inspirations for the family medicine revolution. He wrote many years ago in the 70s about family medicine as counterculture. And one of the things that he said often was that it was important for family physicians to stop accepting the status quo and to start resisting. And I think that resonates today, 40 years later. I think it resonates very well with the hamster wheel that many family physicians feel that they run on every day to provide care for patients. And we really must stop accepting that status quo, and we need to start resisting. I think the other legacy that he's left behind is this ability to really distill down what it is that we do as family docs to very simple phrases that have power and meaning, and actually, in an odd sort of way, are very social media friendly. And I think that's one of the ways that we can continue to honor him, is to continue his legacy by sharing his story and sharing our stories in the social media space. I think one of the things that he said, the key message that he delivered at the NCSC meeting that I chaired in 2012 was to be there for our patients, and that it's impossible to fake being there for the patient. The patient's either going to know it or not, and it behooves the physician to demonstrate that they are, in fact, there for the patient. And that by being there, it demonstrates that we give a damn. And I just love that language because it's powerful, it's simple, and it truly demonstrates the level of work that we practice on a day-to-day basis in order to deliver high-quality care for our patients that's personalized, that's patient-centered, that makes a difference. And it comes from giving a damn. If you didn't give a damn, then, why are you in this business? It's kind of what we wrote about in our personal statements. And then I think the final thing that he really emphasized, and I think this is particularly true in this era when we are so focused on technology, data, the use of electronic medical records, and he said it's really important for us to know the difference between our job, and our work. And, you know, our job is really what one of my colleagues refers to as defending the inbox. It's managing all the things that are coming in and out of the inbox and kind of taking care of patients virtually in that way, putting in orders, those kinds of things. But the work is the work that we do on a day-to-day basis when the door is closed and we're not typing on the screen. Typing on the computer terminal, and we're listening to the patient, and we're giving the patient the opportunity to tell their story, the opportunity to vent, the opportunity to cry, the opportunity to be vulnerable. I think that is the essence of what we do in our work on a day-to-day basis. And I think one of the ways, again, we can honor him is to continue to remember his messages through social media.
So final thoughts, do you have any on leadership, innovation, 2014 year of the family physician?
Yeah, so on leadership, I think we've gotten to this point in history where we cannot wait for others to recognize that we family physicians and other primary care specialties are capable of leadership and stewardship of the American healthcare system. And I'm reflecting back to a few years ago when the past AAFP president, Roland Gertz, came to Sacramento. And in his speech to the Congress of Delegates, he said, "Our time is now." And I still think that message holds true even several years later. So we can't keep, we got to keep our foot on the pedal, and we can't give up. We can't stop now. As for innovation, I think back to the 1990s and the tech industry, and how there was so much innovation with the internet and everything that was going on in Silicon Valley. And truthfully, I'm seeing that now in healthcare. And having gone to Stanford as an undergrad, I missed out on the tech boom. But man, am I stoked about what's happening in the healthcare space. Mobile tech, big data, lean and workflow changes, team-based care, population health, virtual medicine, direct primary care. There's so much stuff going on in the healthcare space right now, and it just makes one's head spin. And I really do think there's a lot of family physicians and primary care leaders that are at the forefront of this. So, and that's the reason why for 2014 year of a family physician, I'm really bullish on 2014 for family docs. I think there's continued interest in primary care for medical students. There's a better understanding from the public on how important primary care is, and also for hospital systems and other large systems of care to recognize how important it is to have primary care networks. I think there's a real favorable job market for family docs. From what I understand, you know, for the last 7 years, family medicine has been the top recruited specialty for a lot of headhunters. And I think especially those family docs that have additional skill sets in information technology, in practice transformation, in quality improvement, health policy, population health. A lot of students have gotten additional training in these areas, and I really think that there's going to be an opportunity for them to flourish and grow into tomorrow's leaders. So for all those reasons, I'm totally bullish on 2014, and this is going to be a big year for family medicine.
Gotcha. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Jay Lee, for taking time out of your day to speak with us, and we look forward to seeing you this weekend.
I appreciate the opportunity, Cody. Looking forward to seeing everyone here in Sacramento.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
Thank you.
During the afternoon of day one at the all-member advocacy meeting, I spoke with CFP student council members, including our next members of the month, Laura Doan and Matthew Varallo, about their experiences at the all-member advocacy meeting. Each student is graduating in a few months, so they also provided insight in their experiences with the match. So we're here at the all-member advocacy meeting, and I'm here with some of our student leaders. So I'd like to go around and introduce yourself.
My name is Laura Dwan. I'm a fifth-year combined MD-MBA candidate at the UC Irvine School of Medicine and Paul Mirage School of Business.
My name is Matthew Varallo. I'm a fourth-year osteopathic candidate from Western University.
And my name is David Tran. I'm a fourth-year medical student at the UC Irvine School of Medicine.
And my name is Stacey Ludwig. I also am a fifth-year dual degree student, getting an MD and PH focus in health policy at the Keck School of Medicine of USC.
Awesome. Well, welcome, you guys. So just wondering if you could go around and kind of talk about your journey about getting into med school. Why do you even went to med school to begin with, and why are you choosing family medicine ultimately?
All right. Well, I actually went to college in New York City at Columbia University, and I chose the city because I was actually interested in journalism to start. I wasn't the typical one who knew I would do medicine from the get-go, but service was a large component of my life, and I wanted a way to really give back to the community, and I felt that although journalism had that detective aspect that I really loved, it didn't quite fulfill my service needs. That's how I discovered medicine, where you could play detective, but you can also help people every day. Although I had a great time in New York City, my goal was to come back home to California, as I'm from the Bay Area originally. And so when I got into California schools, I was ecstatic. And then through medical school, I discovered a passion for health policy as well, like Stacy. And so I pursued the MBA to really understand the efficiencies and inefficiencies in our system and what we can do to help change for healthcare reform.
Great.
Well, I actually knew I wanted to be a doctor around the age of 9 or 10 years old, which I still think is kind of strange, but I always wanted to help people. I always thought of myself working with others and giving back to them, and I also wanted to, you know, as I went along in my studies through both high school and college and doing more and more volunteer work, working in the hospitals and teaching, you know, everything about medicine really spoke to me, not only just helping our patients and the underserved, but also helping those behind us, helping people who are in high school and in college and our colleagues in medical school, and again, when we're residents, and helping them advance through this treacherous career we call medicine, because nobody can do it alone, and it's important for those of us who have been there to reach back and help others.
I actually grew up as a teenage caretaker most of my life, and so for most of my life I've cared for first a sick parent, and then later on people who employed me as a caretaker while I was in college. For me, the journey to medicine was rough, but a lot of what drew me into family medicine is the advocacy for community, speaking up for those in need, speaking up for the underserved. When I got to medical school, I found that's what really drew me into family medicine, because it's always been about community.
Gotcha.
I also had a more scenic route to medicine. I originally studied communicative disorders and sciences and worked as an audiologist with the hearing impaired. I think I knew that I always wanted to work serving others in some capacity, but I found that I was more drawn to the science and actually being able to diagnose and treat the illness rather than doing more of the rehabilitative work. And, you know, in medical school, I think I always have had an interest in health policy and was very active in the health policy interest group at USC, and eventually was co-president. And As I progressed, I came to realize that family medicine is really, it really holds the key to make a difference and to really work within a policy arena and best represent the needs. I think that primary care is the direction that we really need to focus on, as we're, you know, focusing here at AMAM. And, you know, I really look forward to being able to integrate that into my career and being able to take my experiences, you know, on the ground and seeing my patients' needs and my fellow clinicians' needs and trying to make a difference.
Gotcha. And for those younger med students out there, I wonder if you could talk about the interview process, the match process, and how that's been going for you guys.
The match is like dating. It truly is. You know, do I like you? Do you like me? No, I can't tell you, but no, really, I do like you. Can you give me a hint?
It's not you, it's me.
It's not you, it's me. So the match process, I kind of felt is, it's fun, but stressful at the same time. You know, you're wondering who's going to give you the interview, what interviews are you going to go to, you know, and what are they going to ask you? I mean, the most anxiety you have once you have the interviews, you know, that you get past the anxiety of getting them. Then once you when you go to them, you go, what are they going to ask me? And then when you get it over, all you worry about is, well, did I handle that right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's completely normal feelings. Everybody goes through it. I'm sure all of you felt quite a bit of anxiety during this match season as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So, but the important thing is just to be yourself. I don't think there's anything more important than being yourself on these interviews, because that's what you want them to know, because you want them to want you for who you are and what you bring to the program, and that way you know that you make the best fit.
Gotcha.
I would encourage those younger medical students to really go on more interviews than they'd expect to, because initially, I thought I knew what I wanted in a program, but it wasn't until I started to go to a wide variety of interviews that I realized there are some things in programs that really resound with me, some things I cannot live without, and other things that I could. And so, like Matt says, I think it's a big game of finding that right match, that right cultural and personality fit for you, and until you actually see the wide variety of programs, you won't really get a feel of that from the websites.
And it's okay to change your mind, too. You can go someplace thinking you love it and then turn around and go, that wasn't what I expected. Do I still love it? It's okay to ask those questions.
I feel like the residency interviewing process has actually been just a huge privilege, because each of us has been hitting the road for the last 4 or 5 months even sometimes. But with each interview, we got a chance to see what primary care training is like across the state. In all these different settings, in county programs, academic programs, private programs, and even the community-based programs. So that's given us a lot of opportunities, and in no other profession do we get to go to each of these programs and talk about what we love, which for us is primary care. And so it's a really exciting time. With that in mind, it is also tiring at times, and it can be incredibly stressful. But
and expensive.
And very, very expensive. But it's worth it. Because in my opinion, this is a huge privilege that each of us gets to do this, and maybe kind of put our feet down and take a stake in the future of primary care.
I agree with everything that's been said, and they've done a great job kind of covering the interview season. I would say for the med students that are kind of still deciding if they want to do family medicine, you know, after going through the interview process and now waiting to match, you know, I think it's really important to do what's going to make you happy. I think looking at programs, there are certain programs that, you know, there are multiple great programs, and whether they're community or academic, and I think you need to look at what is going to make you happy. You're not going to get bad training at most of any of these programs. I think that there's not a one-size-fits-all by any means, and really, in the end, you do have to look at your own happiness, and that even goes to before you get to interview season. You know, when you're evaluating what to specialize in, if you're, you know, you want to do primary care, but you haven't decided on the realm, whether it be internal med or family med, you know, or pediatrics or OB-GYN, you know, really evaluate what you want ultimately in your career, and your happiness should be one of the key factors that decides.
Gotcha. And I was wondering if you guys can talk about your experience so far at the AMAM this year and kind of describe what it's in it for students and residents and what they can learn.
So this is a few of our second AMAM. Prior, it was called the Congress of Delegates. And I think the difference I saw between this year and last year is that this year's really focused on pertinent issues that affect everyone just because of the climate of our healthcare system. There's a lot of talk on the ACA, Covered California, and what that means to us as practicing physicians, future physicians, and for our patients. So I think that's really great. We have a large showing of students this year, I feel, more than last year, because the topics really affect them. They want to learn what they can tell to their patients, what they can tell to their friends about the exchange. And so I think there's a younger audience, and I think that's very promising for the future of family medicine.
I think this year is a testament to how dynamic the healthcare situation really is. Last year, we had a lot of focus on not just graduate medical education, but a variety of scope bills that were going to affect our patients and our profession. And this year, there's less emphasis on scope and more on policy and advancement and what, you know, educating through graduate medical education, and then the MICRA issues, and then, of course, reimbursement. So it's a complete shift of what we saw last year versus this year. And, you know, really that just goes to show you that you really need to stay up to date. You really need to stay involved. You really need to keep your ear to the ground, because it constantly shifts. The dynamics and the environment is constantly changing, and it's important for people who are involved to stay involved.
Yeah, I think with this particular conference, the involvement, you can feel the change in the air being in that room, because every single person who's going up there is up there either advocating for where they come from, whether it's a rural community or an urban community, addressing issues with these bills that affect their scope of practice and how they practice medicine, but also looking forward into the future and seeing where is this all going, where is healthcare going. And it's one of the few places where I find in healthcare there's always a little bit of apprehension about change in healthcare, but people are really looking forward in the future and looking very progressively. How can we be better family physicians? How can we better implement healthcare in our communities? With that in mind, for me, I'm just totally stoked. It's how often will you ever be in the same room as the person who wrote the textbook in primary care policy, Kevin Grunbach? And when else will you be in the room with the executive director of Covered California and have the opportunity to ask them questions? It's just been, as a student, very empowering.
I agree. It is very empowering, and I think that, you know, family medicine has really reached its time. It really is the year of the family physician, and, you know, I think that we're in a unique position to where not only are we amped to be able to speak, but I think our legislators are at that point of realizing how important our voice is, and that they're more attentive to it, and I'm really looking forward to the legislative meetings that we have scheduled on Monday and being able to meet with our legislators and how willing many of them are to actually hear our opinions, and knowing how much gravity family medicine has on the success of actually extending healthcare to, you know, the general population in California. I mean, without us, the insurance extension means nothing. I mean, and so it's a great time for family medicine, and it is very exciting to be able to be a part of it and be part of that voice through the AMAM.
And lastly, I was wondering if you guys could plug the student council, get more students involved, and why would they want to join the council?
Because you get to hang out with awesome people.
Right, why wouldn't you want to join the council?
I think the neat thing is this year Matt and I are co-chairs and Dave is a co-vice chair. And I think the unique thing about council is it's an opportunity to really meet with passionate, like-minded young adults. These are people who are going to ride the wave of change. And these are ones who are not only going to ride it, they're going to lead the way that it goes. And it's really great to get empowered and meet these people who share your visions for the future. And it kind of makes you excited for the future and makes you look forward to it. And it makes you think of all the great things that will be possible with the teamwork, all the synergy that's going to happen. So it's a lot of positive feelings.
I agree. I think this was definitely probably the most enlightening and empowering experience of my young career. Do we have careers yet? Are these considered our careers?
Kind of a lifestyle, I would say. Yeah, it's kind of all consuming.
No paychecks yet.
No paychecks yet. Yeah. But you know, it has truly been an awesome experience getting to be involved and to learn about the situations that are happening. I mean, how many students did we come across in this last year that didn't know about the scope issues, that didn't know that there was a bill to increase graduate medical education, which affects all of us. It's going to actually affect us in 2 weeks, you know, when the match comes out. So it really has been just an amazing experience, especially to work with these fine people. I don't know if they'd say the same about me, but it's okay.
I think it's more, and it's just such a privilege and honor. You get to go to these state and national conferences as California's delegates. You represent the student and resident voices. You vote on measures that come out, and it's a lot of responsibility, but it also encourages you to stay on top of what's happening to really understand the climate and how to best represent your constituency.
And if you go to Lobby Day, you actually have the opportunity to talk to your local legislator directly, which is something you probably won't do as a medical student at an academic institution, which frankly can be a little disempowering. I think being involved with the council kind of, as Matt suggested, it kind of helps us keep our ears to the ground. So when these issues come up and we're at school and we're talking about primary care, how many times have I had the conversation where I'm sitting across the table from someone and they kind of look around and they kind of look at me and they go, where do you see this all going?
Yeah.
Because it's the people in the Student Resident Council, the people who are involved with the CFP, who know what's going on legislatively, who know where things are headed and what our future is as physicians in California.
And what I think probably one of the most enriching things about the council is that these are not figurehead positions. We were empowered by the organization. We went out and set forth and laid groundwork for our Building Bridges program, you know, which is going to vastly increase the collaboration and communication of between residents, students, and attending physicians. And really, it's just...
I mean, can't say enough about it. I think the great thing is it gives us the power to strengthen that family medicine pipeline and therefore just strengthen the future of family medicine. And what an honor to do that.
I think that, you know, with the ACA being implemented, you know, there are challenges ahead. This is not going to be a smooth process, you know, completely without bumps. We're going to, you know, have to make changes as we go. And that's just part of implementing any new policy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what I think that the Leadership Council really offers is an opportunity to have some control over that, to actually have a voice and to be able to, you know, when you face frustrations, you have the opportunity to then take those frustrations to the Leadership Council to have them heard and to actually have, you know, some impact in the direction that our careers will all take, and you know, these changes will impact us. And so I think that we all need to take advantage of the opportunity to be heard, and to, you know, it's going to make all of our careers happier, and, you know, create the job, workplace, and the patient care that we want to offer to our patients in our practice.
As they suggested, there's a lot of apprehension, especially after the implementation of the ACA, with Covered California rolling out. There's so much anxiety and apprehension about this, but by staying informed and knowing how to approach these things, how to talk to people about these issues, how to talk to people about Covered California, for instance, by being involved, it gives us an opportunity to grab the bull by the horns. We don't have to be ignorant to these issues as physicians, and that's just absolutely incredible.
All right, well, thank you for taking time out of the conference, dragging you down here to record a podcast. So here's to a good weekend.
Absolutely.
Cheers.
Woo, cheers.
2FPW Director of Government Relations Adam Francis was also kind enough to offer his own assessment of the weekend's events. So I'm here with fellow CAFPer Adam Francis. How you doing?
Good. How you doing, Cody?
So if you want to introduce yourself to everyone listening.
Sure. Adam Francis again. I am the Deputy Director of Government Relations for the Academy, and I'm also responsible for running our Political Action Committee, which raises funds to contribute to candidates who are friendly to family medicine and supportive of patients.
Great. And this past weekend was one of our marquee events, the All-Member Advocacy Meeting. So I'm wondering if you could talk about how it went, kind of wrap it up, summarize it for everyone.
Sure. It was a great meeting. It was the first time that we've done the All-Member Advocacy Meeting before it was our Congress of Delegates. We really wanted to focus more on training family physicians throughout the state to be able to advocate for their specialty and for patients. It was an amazing meeting. We had more turnout than we've ever had at any other CFP advocacy meeting. Over 100 attendees talking about Covered California, the Health Insurance Exchange, the executive director, Peter Lee, the executive director of the board of Covered California, was there. We had presentations from Kevin Grumbach, who's a family physician sort of research expert, and he talked about access to care in the medical home. We gave away our 2014 Champion of Family Medicine Award. That's an award we give out to legislators who have done a great job of advocating for family medicine and patients, and we gave that to Assembly Member Susan Bonilla. She's from the Concord area, as well as Assembly Speaker John Perez. He's from LA. We had a huge fundraising weekend. The attendees really stepped up. They realized that 2014 is going to be an extremely important year for family medicine. They raised more money for our political action committee than we've ever raised at any meeting before. Really was an awesome weekend, and glad everyone was able to make it out. And hopefully we're going to take this energy all throughout the year and really advocate for our priorities.
And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about Lobby Day.
Sure. So the day after the all-member advocacy meeting ends, we have our Family Medicine Lobby Day, where family physicians, usually over from the weekend, stay, but some come from other areas near the Capitol. And we set up meetings with legislators and go in groups and go and visit them and talk about our priorities. We again had another record turnout for Lobby Day. Over 54 family physicians and medical students came. And the main focus of the day was to support our sponsored bill, which is AB 2458. It's a bill that would create a funding source to grow the number of residency slots in California. As you know, Cody, California is facing a shortage of primary care physicians in the mm-hmm. state, and we really need to be able to create additional training slots, bring in more medical students into California to train in family medicine and other specialties of need in California. The number of slots is limited by Medicare funding, so we really need to find another funding source and have legislators make that a priority.
Great. And for those who weren't able to attend this past weekend, how can others get involved? Donate to the PAC, become a key contact, that sort of thing.
Yeah, the first step, of course, go to our website, familydocs.org. You're probably on there if you're listening to this podcast, but go to the advocacy tab and just click on Get Involved. There's lots of different ways you can be involved.
definitely always feel free to reach out to CFP staff. We can help you out with whether you want to get heavily involved or just a little bit involved. There's lots of different ways to do it, whether it's becoming a key contact, giving to the PAC, just getting our legislative update, which we send out on Friday, so you can be informed about the stuff we're working on.
Great. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to speak with us.
Sure. Thanks, Cody.
Have a good one. Thank you again for listening, and remember to participate in the 2014 Year of the Family Physician campaign using the hashtag 2014YearFP and posting your photos on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. And also make sure to visit us online at fmrevolution.org.